are you?
I am good. I can't believe the response to the podcast. It's been so nice that people want to hear our apparently nice voices.
I know. Do you know what? It's so funny because my American friends are listening to it and they're just captivated by the Irish accents. Like, I sent you a screenshot from a friend of a friend was listening to it. And it was actually just gas. She was like, they could literally read the back of it, like a paracetamol packet, like just the ingredients, and it would be like a fairy tale. It would be like ASMR. And I was like, I just don't see that, but thank you.
No, it's been really nice to hear the feedback, and it's so appreciated because we're just doing this for the crack. We're enjoying,
honestly,
talking about fashion,
shooting the shit,
having some interesting conversations with some really interesting people. I'm so excited for some of the episodes to come up that we've already recorded. I'm dying to put them live. But it's just been really nice to have this like little space that we're creating. And what a treat the universe served us on a dish this week. The Influencer Olympics are back, baby.
Influencer Olympics is the best term for this whole thing, honestly. I can't.
It just sums it up perfectly. After a 2-year hiatus, we were finally given what we wanted, boys and girls. Social media feeds full of barely dressed influencers in Coachella Valley.
Okay, hot take. It looked like everyone was wearing cheap Shein. Obviously, they weren't.
It's because they were. No, I have trawled through about 90 websites today already, and all I'm seeing is Boohoo, Zara, Shein. But you know what? Okay, I'm all for the high-low dressing, but a Shein $199 top does not deserve to be paired with Balenciaga trainers under no circumstances, or a Fendi handbag.
Yeah.
They should never meet.
Sorry, can we just hold for a second? There's so many of these influencers are rich, okay? They are rich AF, and it literally looks like they got a top, put it through a shredder and put it back on again, and then shat on it once, put it through the shredder again. Like, literally, it was, I actually can't. Like, it's so... Poppy Delevingne needs to be put in the bin right now. She needs to be put in the bin. I can't.
Well, look, we all know money doesn't buy style or
this
taste.
Is true. Yes, I've seen many guys on dating apps with massive Gucci logo hoodies and everything. I'm like, I don't care if you're rich, you've no style.
Yeah. Can I just say, I am so thankful that we didn't have social media when we were going to Oxygen, because let's lest we forget, all these beautiful people are in guaranteed sunshine in Palm Springs. That automatically makes for quite a dreamy backdrop for Instapics or whatever. Mm-hmm. But can you imagine wearing those outfits, running around, where was it, Leash? In a field full of cans.
Oh, terrifying. Honestly, I've had to delete all those from my Facebook page because I give myself PTSD from the clothes I was wearing.
Hang on, you have photos of you at Oxygen on Facebook. You are young. Oh my God, I thought
you're a year older than me.
I have my photos on Bebo. I definitely didn't upload a single photo from... I didn't even bring like a new phone. I remember just having disposables. Do you know?
My God, you were that? You had disposables. My God, you're cool.
Stop trolling me. What was your favorite outfit that you wore to Oxygen or any festival, if you can remember?
Oh my God. Sorry, actually, all my festival outfits have been really bad. I remember I graduated from NCAD, which I still in my head feel like that's been fairly recent, but I would cancel myself if I saw myself walking in that outfit now. I'd be like, I don't know her. So I wore a kimono.
Okay.
That's cancelable on its own.
No, I'm into it.
And I have a few that's come down from my grandma, but then...
That's amazing.
So I wore like a blue kimono. It's actually stunned, to be honest. It's from Topshop, and it was like one of the, you know, the expensive section in Topshop.
Topshop boutique.
Love. Mm. When I used to work there. Mm. And then I wore leopard print joggers.
Sorry, that sounds very
and
my
a,
street.
And a crop top. And then some Aztec jewelry.
Okay. You had me. Yeah. You know what? You were going good when you said leopard print. Crop top and Aztec jewelry need to just go into the bin. Just put yourself into the bin.
What? Yeah. I need to be laid to rest. What did you wear? I need to be late to rest pretty much every day at this stage.
I'm just surprised you don't be frolicking around the fields in Crocs.
Like, I'm a full-time Croc connoisseur, part-time Instaho. But what did you wear to the festival?
Will you put that on your Insta bio?
Part-time Instaho, full-time Croc connoisseur. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Full disclosure, I do not own any summer clothing. I have instead kind of built this collection of clothes that are vacuum packed for 9 months of the year, and they come out during festival season, and they are a very hard mix of my star sign, I'm a Cancer,
mm-hmm, we love,
and just my need to both stand out and be a wallflower simultaneously. So there's like sequined leotards, shorts that are far too high up my arse.
You lost me at sequins. I hate sequins. That's why Poppy Delamine is be put in the bin. Brown fringe jacket and a sequins. Even worse than sequins. Flip sequins. I can't. Anyway. Is a sequin or sequins? I can't. I just had my third dose of the Pfizer vaccine because I'm so delayed. I had COVID about 14 times. I couldn't get it. And I have 3 brain cells. And is it sequin or sequins? I'm about to burst into tears.
All right. I do like a bit of sequins for a festival situation. I always go back to the American Apparel. I know we should not even mention that brand, but come on, that was like such a cultural touch point of when we were growing up.
I mean
before all the controversy, but I must have owned about 25 American Apparel bodysuits in my time, and they're pretty much all still up in a vacuum packed bag in my parents' house.
And keep them, why not?
Well, listen, they're going to be coming back out for Primavera in a few weeks. So,
did you have any of the American Apparel disco leggings or whatever they're called?
I had several pairs of American Apparel disco pants, particularly the shiny black ones, the shiny gold ones. I also had a shiny gold swimsuit leotard halter neck.
Oh my God, well, that's a lot of words. Love.
If you can put all of them together. Like, I'm actually cringing for myself so much. I'm going to take all of this out and put it on and take a pic for Insta.
All at once. Joey from Friends vibes. Please do that.
I literally am. But I think in comparison to our friends across the water in Coachella, we have a bit of we have a few style lessons to learn, I think.
Or to teach them.
Or maybe we could teach them, yeah. Mm-hmm. But in fairness, Harry Styles' disco ball Gucci moment will live rent-free in my head for the rest of 2022.
In fairness, that is the only sequins, whatever, thing that I actually should approve of.
At least it's not like flip sequins.
Yeah, true.
I actually really loved Storm Reid's Etro two-piece. She basically rocked Etro the whole weekend. But like, we love Storm Reid. She needs so much more airtime. Mm-hmm. I really only discovered her like 2 or 3 years ago when she was just, you know, on the cusp of being emerging talent. But her style credentials are quite major, I think. But also, did you see Kim K was wearing one of your fave new bags?
Yeah. Okay, hot take. I know she's wearing Rick Owens or whatever.
She was, yeah.
I didn't like the outfit at all.
She looked like she was going to a leave insert party in 2012.
She looked like she was going to Tramco or something.
She looked like she was going to Tramco, except that she had like, you know, glitzed it up with the Caperni bag. In fairness, that is such a major brand. I still don't know how they make those bags.
Yeah, it's the...
But they look like water drops.
Yeah,
I think she had the glass
one. It's the glass one, which is the collab with... I want to say Home in Heaven it's called. And it's absolutely stunning. But Jesus, imagine being drunk on a night out and
smashing it.
Some lad, like me on the dance floor, some lad rushing up against me and give him a wallop with the thing over like a cat.
No, imagine, never mind the lad beside you. Imagine if you smashed it, like, you'd be raging.
Absolutely raging.
I can't even bring a new lipstick out without smudging it. Like, couldn't bring out a bag like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Chloe Cherry, j'approuve.
Who?
Chloe Cherry. She's the girl that was in Euphoria with the lips. And
oh yeah, sorry. Yeah,
she was an OnlyFans girl before that. And I just love her chaotic dressing. I know you would absolutely hate it, but it's not the like Shein, like put it through a shredder, put it back on again kind of thing. It's just like chaos, her dressing. And I like fucking love it. It's so good. I actually think I saw this meme on Instagram today, and it was like the outfits at Coachella are the same as if you literally took shrooms and went into Urban Outfitters. You would have the exact same experience. Like,
yeah, apart from Coachella, what's been on your radar this week?
You're going to think I'm the biggest hype beast ever, but you know the guy, his name is Justin Saunders, and he started that blog Jound. I hope I'm pronouncing it. It's like J-J-J-J Ound kind of thing. Jound. I literally had to look up how it's pronounced. Anyway, he just released New Balance 990s, and they're like the 990 V3s, and I really like them, and they're like €600.
What? Oh my God, can you share a link with me, because I need to see these now. Yeah. Wait, have you seen the Ghani New Balance runners?
No.
Oh, see, these are gorgy, and they're like an off-white and mint color, and they're the retro 305s. Yeah, the Ghani ones are the same shape, same silhouette as them, really? Except just not. Yeah, not €600.
I have a couple of weddings coming up. Like, I have about four weddings coming up this summer, and I really want to wear Irish to them all. And I wear like obviously like browsed around like the Ghani section as well. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I feel like I've seen all this stuff before.
Oh, who are you thinking of wearing?
Well, so I don't know if you know Leah Cowan Design.
Of
she's
course.
She's kind of new. Yeah. And she's a fashion designer. I went to college with her, and it literally just popped up on my Instagram feed. She went to a wedding. I assume she was wearing her own dress, and she was wearing these black lace gloves. And I kind of am all here for the opera gloves at the moment, but they were just to the wrist, these ones, and they're like black lace. And then it was like this, it was just this gorgeous, like kind of poofy black dress, and it was just like, I'm all about like black on black, obviously. And it was, she's like dressed what's her name from the Derry Girls and Bridgerton, Nicola Coughlin. She's dressed her, and I don't know, I kind of was like, maybe I'd wear something like that. Like, I have a big one in June like that I need to go to. But I suppose, what about you, anything else catch your eye?
Yeah, you know what, I saw a stat last week actually when the podcast went live, and it's been living at the front of my mind ever since. And it was a stat about Shein's clothes they're producing every day. I mean, whether you're spending all your time on the internet or you're living in a black hole, it's pretty much impossible to ignore the juggernaut that is Shein right now.
I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize it was that bad.
For context, right, first of all, Shein is 15 years old, which I didn't know. So it's only really in the last 18 months that it went from zero to outer space. The Chinese company is absolutely plagued with reports of labor exploitation, horrendous working conditions, environmental abuse, which this podcast is just not even long enough to allow to talk about that. And it steals designs from established and emerging brands. But despite that, people still cannot get enough of it and are willing to part with their hard-earned money and put it into a brand that is essentially destroying the planet, destroying communities, all for the sake of, an outfit that's under €20. The graphic was showcasing the extraordinary number of clothing that they produce or they put up onto their website every day. And by extraordinary, I mean absolutely disgusting. Like, right, for context, H&M are adding around 4,400 new pieces to their website every day. Zara add almost 7,000. Boohoo are adding over 18,000 new pieces to its website every day.
Holy hell.
What, are you ready for it? Shein are adding more than 300,000 new items of clothing to their website every single day.
Oh my God.
And I'd put all my possessions on the line and say 99.9% of those clothing are made from plastic, which means they're going to lie in landfills for hundreds and hundreds of years because they don't break down. They're not biodegradable.
I actually can't believe that figure. I'm really shocked at that.
Only last month, Shein did a pop-up in Dublin just off South William Street. Yeah. And I walked by and it really like took me by surprise, because especially in that part of town where it's kind of renowned for a lot of Irish design boutiques,
yeah,
and Irish crafts.
Chabelle is down the road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Louis Copeland's right across the road. I was just quite disgusted by it. Why is Dublin accommodating brands who mass produce fast fashion, which directly impacts supply chains, our planet, its people and animals?
What would you, so let's say I go into Penny's, I see an oversized bomber jacket, me looking for a bomber jacket everywhere. The only nice bomber jackets I could see was on Farfetch and they were like 600 quid. And then I go into Penny's and it was 21 euro. And I was like, oh my God, I've worn it every day, literally since I bought it in the last 10 days. I know I'm actually going to have that because I don't tend to, personally, I've never really been the one to be like a bit of a retail therapy shopping addict kind of person. I'm never one like, oh, I'll nip up to the shop, get a, you know, nice top and jeans for the weekend kind of thing. But what would you say, like, is that bad, what I did? Or is that like...
I'd never make somebody feel bad for shopping in the high street. The high street is an integral part of our city's landscape and the economy. The likes of Penny's, the high street is absolutely essential for families to be able to clothe themselves. It's about making conscious decisions. It's like, instead of buying a new outfit every week, can you forgo another polyester dress instead and maybe put it towards a pair of like really good classic denim jeans that will last you know, 7 years, 10 years or whatever. You shouldn't ever feel guilty for buying something, but it's about
educated buying kind of thing.
Being more aware and more considered as a buyer. But let's be honest, the most sustainable thing you can have or own is something that's already in your wardrobe. It's hard when you're standing on the spot and you're looking at a play suit that's 12 euros and you just, you know, it ticks boxes for you. But if you just reduce the amount of clothing, I think that's a massive start just by reducing your own footprint. Even just questioning yourself, like if a t-shirt is under 5 euros, who really is getting the profit from that? If the cost of the t-shirt to make was actually only 40 cents, how is that 40 cents distributed? What family is going to suffer from that? Are they being looked after in terms of education? Are they working in safe working environments? Are they entitled to time off and paid time off and sick leave? Like, you do have to factor in all of these elements when you're buying your clothes now. And of course, it can sound like so like, oh, stop hammering on about fast fashion and the environment, but we're at the 12th hour. We have to have these conversations now, you know? So like trying to reinvent the wheel, so to speak, and like swap and change outfits that maybe you would have never thought would go together. Like throw out all those stupid fashion rules that say you can't wear, what was it like?
Black and navy.
I literally wear black and navy all the time. You know, things like that. I'm like, that is so stupid. Like just wear what makes you happy. Wear what makes you feel joyful.
But have you seen those influencer Shein hauls? They'll literally take out a napkin. Well, it looks like a napkin with a string around it, put the string around their neck and it's like a top. And they're like, isn't this, I'm like, literally a gust of wind is going to tear that into two. Like
it's a trend loving bargain hunter's wet dream, but there's a lot more going on beneath the veil of cheap flammable clothing. And I just think by being a tiny bit more aware of the state of Shein's infrastructure, the fact that there's absolutely no traceability, the fact that like companies as big as like Ralph Lauren, Dr. Martens and Levi's are all taking them to the cleaners for trademark violations. Like these are bad guys. Like you just don't want to be messing with these guys.
I'm learning a lot at the moment in terms of fast fashion. Like when Business of Fashion put up that graph about how much Shein produce on like compared to Zara and the rest of them, I was really shocked. And I am learning along with everyone, but I've always had a limited wardrobe. I've always reworn my stuff because I'm a comfort dresser. So, but on the off chance I wasn't a comfort dresser, I would probably be buying from Shein. So it's such an easy, it's so easy to turn a blind eye and like ignorance is bliss kind of thing. But I think we're past that now. Like what you said, we're at the 12th hour. We've literally burnt this planet into flames.
You also have to take into account the necessity and the ease of shopping on websites like Shein, especially for busy families who don't have time to go to the high street, or they don't have time to go in and try on clothes. Like that is a luxury. Or even being able to buy an outfit for under £10 or 10 euros. Like I understand the need for all that. And also one person on Twitter pointed out how important the maternity wear was for her in particular. And that didn't even come into my conscious because obviously I've never been pregnant, never had to buy maternity wear. So there is definitely a need for more options for people, but I just, no amount of ultra cheap biker shorts or bikinis are worth the environmental impact, unethical labor conditions, cruel animal welfare, and murky design ethics from Shein.
Amen, sister.
Oh, I'm Shein. Okay, one more bit, just to keep in the fast fashion vibes. It's Fashion Revolution Week. Woo!
Love. I'm letting off confetti cannons.
No, Fashion Revolution is a not-for-profit global activist organization that basically demands a clean, safe, fair, transparent, and accountable fashion industry. Everything that Shein doesn't do. Fashion Revolution Week started on Monday, and there's over 100 countries now around the world who are involved in this like growing community that basically wants to like highlight all the inequalities in the industry and show everybody basically the dire state of the world right now because of the fashion industry. But there's lots of really interesting education opportunities and lots of cool events happening if you check out their website, which is just fashionrevolution.org. And they're also doing lots of like live talks on Instagram. But they posted loads of interesting stats on their Instagram this week. And one of them has been like, just kind of like took my breath away, but made me just stop and think for a sec. And it was like, it takes just over 4 days for a CEO from one of the top 5 global fashion brands to earn what a Bangladeshi garment worker will earn in her lifetime.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, the world is fucked.
The world is fucked. But you might remember, you might have come across the hashtag Who Made My Clothes campaign. So Fashion Revolution are the people behind that campaign. And they're basically calling for really post Rana Plaza when this all came to the fore to ask like, who actually were the hands that made your clothes? Were they offered safe working conditions? Were they paid fairly?
Right.
You know, and so they basically photograph people all around the world in these different factories with like big signs being like, I made your clothes. And it's just so, I find it so fascinating to think that like, to think of all the pairs of hands, big or small, that touched that piece of clothing before it came onto your back. Yeah. Like, you know?
Oh my God.
I think it's really fascinating.
It is fascinating. God, this needs to be a whole separate episode.
At the end of the day, sustainability should be the norm, not the exception. And I think it's going to take the industry another while still to be able to do a full flip and people to be comfortable buying sustainable clothing or just cutting down consumption altogether. You know,
it needs to be an overarching like rule across the board, because like, again, like it's the whole ignorance is bliss thing. I've been doing it for years. Like like in terms of like, I go through periods of being vegetarian, vegan, then back on the meat, then the whole thing. And then like, it there's stuff to say about that. And then I don't know, it needs to be a kind of the hammer down rule across the board. Because if you leave it up to the regular person, it's like,
it's hard. Yeah. Like even trying to explain it to my mom's generation of like why you shouldn't go into your favorite high street shop and just splurge every week. But just even by having these conversations and being more aware of the clothes that you're wearing or buying, or even just knowing what they're made from, knowing the difference between a biodegradable and a non-biodegradable material can make such a difference. Yeah. You know, and even like learning about materials a bit more, like I found out a few years ago that they're making materials from wood pulp and from silkworms. And
oh my God.
And now we have mushroom leather coming out, and it is so fascinating. And I do have a lot of faith that the industry will be able to turn things around, but it's going to take a lot more collective effort.
Yeah, I think so too.
What we're going to be doing every other week is we really want to introduce you to an Irish hero of design. And that is basically somebody who we think is like flying the flag for Irish culture, heritage and craft on the world stage. And we think we are truly hashtag blessed to be the proud exports of the likes of Louise Kennedy, John Rocha, Paul Costello, Colin Horgan, Robin Lynch, Ethan McNamara, Paula Rowan. I could go on.
We absolutely love. And so the first Monday in May is coming up, and what kind of like spurred this theme on for us is that the theme for the Met Gala, the first Monday in May, is unsung American designers. So we were like, how about we do the same for the podcast?
Honestly, Irish designers offered me like building blocks to be able to get into fashion writing. And it really like catapulted me to like want to know more about them, and like also to question like why Ireland never had like a fashion week the same way London has the Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week, you know, because we still have all these amazing world-class designers from this tiny little country who are known around the world, but we don't celebrate them as much as maybe we should.
Who would sponsor our fashion week if we did? So they have Mercedes-Benz, we've done stores.
No, it'd be like, it'd be Massey Ferguson's. Massey Ferguson's? The tractors.
What's the chipper called again? What's the chipper here called again?
The chipper McCarries. I went to school with one of the McCarries, and after our football matches and stuff, her dad used to bring us chips.
You heard it here first. Look at you flexing. Look at you flexing.
Who needs to meet celebs when you've met a McCarrie?
Tato crisp fashion week.
Well, listen, they've just given up the theme park, so maybe they will sponsor a fashion week. If you could only wear Irish design for the rest of your life, who are the three designers that you would wear?
Oh, that is a good question. Okay. Start thinking on your answer, because there's no, obviously Robin Lynch, Simone Rocha, obviously, because like bury me in that. And then the third one is going to have to be, oh my God. Can I say J.W. Anderson?
But yeah, he's Northern Irish, still Irish. They're very on brand for you. Who would I wear? I would wear, probably sticking with my roots, I'd wear Banshee of Savile Row. Get me some real nice tailored like pantsuit. And I am a real big fan of Aoife McNamara's separates. I think she's really honing in her craft. Great pattern cutter, gorgeous, vibrant pieces. Not your everyday run-of-the-mill kind of stuff. Very out there, but not too out there. Just lovely pieces, especially for like occasions. And my third, hang on, let me think about this now. Amara Earth, who I have literally one of everything that she's ever created. It's made by Amy Condell, who is the most incredible designer, pattern cutter, sewer extraordinaire. And she creates these dresses called the Bless, which transforms into a top. Still haven't figured out how best to wear the bottom half as a skirt, but I'm getting there. I need to just, you know, hook it onto a belt. And then she creates bags that she calls hags, which are bucket hats that turn into bags.
Oh my God. I love that.
And everything is made. Everything's handmade with Irish linen, and it's traceable and sustainable. And for every piece you buy, she will plant a tree.
Okay, I feel like I'm going to burst into tears. This is a loss.
It's so wholesome. I will support her until the end. So basically, we're in good hands if we do have to wear, you know, if we're forced to wear Irish design for the rest of our lives, we're not going to go without clothing. We'll have very good options.
I'd happily only wear Irish design. Happily.
I mean, if my bank account would allow it. But to give a little bit more context about the importance of Irish design, today we are joined by the incredible Paul McLaughlin, who is a fashion critic from Cork and, in my opinion, one of the best fashion writers out there today. And his work has been featured everywhere from Vogue Italia and the New York Times to High Snobiety and Fashionista. He's also a menswear columnist and contributing fashion editor for the Irish Examiner, which we love. Hi, Paul. It's good to have you on the show.
Hi.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's nice to see you both.
So, Paul, you have been writing about the fashion industry and attending trade shows since you were like 13. And to some, that might sound bizarre, but you were actually going to London Fashion Week age 13 and chaperoned by your dad. Is that right?
So I started going when I was 13. It was February 2013, I think. I had been writing for 2 years with my own blog. And I kind of wanted to go over to London and experience Fashion Week. And my parents were very kind and supported me. So I got to go see like a Jasper Conran show, which I think was my first fashion show. And I still kind of vaguely remember it to this day, but I just remember being in that room and being like, oh my God, I'm here.
Do you find that your like close friends and family are kind of nervous to wear stuff around you now because you're like secretly judging them from a distance?
It's a question I always get. Like if I ever introduce myself to someone, they ask me what I do and I say I write about fashion, they'll ask me about like their outfit and I'm like, I really don't give a shit what you're wearing. Like if you're happy, good for you.
Or will they ask like, oh, what should I be wearing next season? What do you tell them? Like whatever you want, Sandra. Yeah,
whatever you want, Sandra. Like it could literally be anything. Like what color is in? I don't know. I suppose it's probably like, I mean, they'd want the actual answer and technically it is my job, so I should provide the answer.
But there's a difference between being like a stylist and then being a fashion critic and that kind of thing. Like, I get those questions as well. I'm a graphic designer technically, so I'm like, I'm in the glue. Like I'm wearing like a gray hoodie with makeup stains on the hood. Like I'm so not. But like people will just, it's the same questions. Is it like The Devil Wears Prada? What bag should I buy? What's the new pattern, trend, color that I should be wearing? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I have no idea. But if you have the answer, tell me.
Gaining access to the shows, I think, is one of the toughest aspects of Fashion Week or the fashion industry in itself. And I have spent many a show standing outside on the railings, freezing cold, trying to spy looks on the runway or, you know, from ages outside a show's face. How did you navigate this when you were kind of starting off in the industry, especially when you were so young and as a freelance journalist, especially?
I got a lot of no's. I suppose I just kind of like started, like some people would have taken a chance on me, I guess. As much as I'm a freelance writer and I've covered for like great publications, it is still difficult to get access. And even at some of those shows, it might have been like a second or third row seat. Like I'm not really in the front row, unless when I was covering for Vogue Italia, I did get, that was like very easy access.
Now listen, Paul, you're talking to two back row experts here, so we're never at the front. So you've already beat us there.
I've only ever seen the back of Anna Wintour's head. I've never seen the front of her head.
Same.
I've never seen the front of her head either. In the Tate, I met her. I went up to her and introduced myself.
Oh my God, what was she like?
Very, like, polite. Like, yeah. She introduced herself to me. And that was that.
Did you kind of go towards London Fashion Week because A, it was kind of the closest to Ireland in terms of exposure to the fashion industry, or was it more to follow Irish designers?
I think it was probably like a mix. It was definitely a practical option and also because of the Irish designers. I think when I first went, I'm trying to think who would have been showing back then. It would have been like Paul Costello. Oh, I went to see John Rosh's last show.
Oh, wow. That's major.
I was in like the seventh row watching down and like it was just very, very ethereal. And I didn't even realize that he was closing the business at the time. So it was really cool to like see that collection and be part of that kind of moment.
I'd love to just be a fly on the wall. Like I want to just be a fly on the wall when the Rosh's are just like having a family dinner on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. I want to see their Sunday roast dinner. I want to see the plates, the forks, the tablecloth, the whole thing. Yeah. I love how much Simone supports Irish like music artists and, you know, different artists. The new Fontaines DC music video, you're like the main girl in it is wearing Simone. And I'm just like, she just is really, she hypes people up. She knows who's good. She supports everyone. And like, it's, and obviously you can spot a Simone dress from she has her own like aesthetic, like so distinctive.
And you would have kind of grown up watching the careers of the likes of Simone and Richard Malone and Natalie B. Coleman, just to name a few. You would have seen their careers going from like point zero to where it is now. But what Irish designers like made the biggest impact on you, or like whose collections have excited you the most from then to now?
I am always fascinated by like what Jonathan Anderson, Simone and Richard Malone do. It would have been just before the pandemic that Fashion Week in February, I remember like those three names were like the stars of the week. Everyone wanted to go to those shows and it was just like they commanded London Fashion Week. I thought that was so nice to see like three Irish designers killing it. But Richard Malone is someone who I admire so much. I think he's such a nice guy. I'm actually going to Wexford tomorrow to see his exhibition.
Oh, the Eileen Gray exhibition. I probably will travel across the country myself just to go and see it because it just looks absolutely spectacular. Please send me like pics when you're there.
Niamh, will we go? We go to Wexco for the weekend.
We're going to go to Wexco for the weekend.
Yeah, Richard Malone is just like one of the, I think, most authentic and just, I think, forward-thinking fashion designer out there. And I really admire the fact that he is sustainably minded and you know, it's something that goes beyond just like materials. It's like, you know, working with regenerative farms in India, and it's paying his workers in London a very fair wage. And he's very transparent. Traceability is a huge thing for him. And I think his vision of sustainability is closer to what other people in the industry need to strive for. And I think while Irish people love Irish people and, you know, we love bigging each other up, I think there is like a neglect of the arts here. And like, you can see that in the fact that those three designers that I just named live and work in London.
I don't know, but also it's really encouraging to see that they do want to retrace their roots and they're super proud to be from Ireland. And you see that woven throughout their collection season after season. Yeah,
totally. Even like if you look at like J.W. Anderson's collections, it's interesting to see like a lot of those like sports themes that run through and military themes that run through. And he obviously, his dad was an international rugby player and he grew up during the Troubles. And like, it's very subtle. And I think Irish people probably appreciate those details more because that is our history. I mean, in the sense of living during like a very politically charged time.
Absolutely. And when you buy like a piece like that, it holds so much more weight than it just looking nice, you know?
Yeah, totally. I bought a Simone Rocha jumper in December and it's kind of eyeleted, I suppose. And it's in like a love heart shape.
Oh, gorge.
Like a pattern all over it. Buying that, it's special because it's like, that's my first Simone Rocha piece. Mm. It's an Irish designer. And like when I wear that, I'll be very proud because it's in a piece of Ireland. Like
I
could be
that.
Anywhere in the world and I could have that on and it'll be a piece of home, which I think is nice to have that kind of, I suppose, association.
Oh my God, don't make me cry. I'm on my period. That's actually, you know, that's a really good point because I think when we think of Irish design, there is a tendency to think of the Kilkenny shop or Aran Knitwear when it is so much more than that. But I think people are kind of frightened of it because of the price point. How do you convince shoppers to go in and spend their hard-earned money on a 400 euro jumper made from Irish materials, responsibly sourced, traceable, versus going into Zara and getting all their wares for under 100 euro?
It's probably like a very, like, this would be a very large conversation because I think if, like, you think about it, we can buy a t-shirt for less than the price of a coffee or less than the price of a sandwich or something like that. People have like a very, I suppose, weird association with what their clothing should cost. And also I get it, like Ireland is a very expensive country to live in. Like inflation is through the roof and, you know, no one can afford rent and everything is like a bit economically dire. But I think you are in any way like connected to your heritage. It should be the exact same buying a Simone Rocha jumper as it is paying like, I don't know, 400 euro to go to France and see Ireland play in the Stade de France. I think like if you put it like that, one's an experience and one's like something that you could have for life and pass it down like an heirloom. I don't know. I feel like it's different strokes. Like I know, for example, like my parents probably wouldn't buy a 400 euro Simone Rocha jumper, whereas I'm like, take my money.
I know my parents are the exact same. They're like, why would you spend so much money on a piece of clothing? But I actually do see them as heirlooms, like you would a piece of jewelry, and have them and care for them and pass them on. And the stories that each of the threads in your jumper holds.
Yeah.
I just think that's lovely.
I feel like Irish people as well, like big names. Is that like association with like, you know, your Michael Kors, your Balenciaga or whatever it is.
Mm, yeah.
Which like personally like wouldn't be like my thing.
But going back to what you were saying about even the 2020 London Fashion Week and how Richard Quinn, Richard Malone, Simone Rocha were amongst the biggest shows of the season, they could very well like be the next big designer to fall into the mainstream. You've now established yourself as one of the leading industry talents and your work always gives a sense of fashion beyond what you see on the surface, beyond the jumper or the trousers. And for me, anyway, your speciality is kind of like reporting on emerging talents. And what would you say are your favorite up and coming Irish designers right now or the ones to watch?
Menswear, I would say Robin Lynch is definitely one of, I think, just the nicest and most talented people working today. I think she could be like the first Irish designer that men especially, because I feel like men in Ireland all dress the same. by and large. Mm-hmm. No offense to all men in Ireland and painting them with the same brush.
No, you should take offense, guys. Come on.
Ditch this blue skinny jeans. I do not want to see them ever again. I think, yeah, that's it. Actually, I don't criticize what people wear. Blue skinny jeans, gotta go.
And brown shoes. And brown shoes. Dublin for the day shoes. Yeah.
But I think Robin is like the first person that will, I suppose, appeal to that person who I just gravely insulted. I don't know. I think her work is, it's very Irish. It's, but it has that kind of like very strong link with sportswear that I think a lot of young men will appreciate.
Yeah, but and it still has that like high fashion sensibility to it as well. But the fact that she was able to marry looks with nostalgia, I think it was quite genius.
Yeah, I think she is absolutely fantastic in that regard. And I would love to see like a greater like commercial success for her here, obviously globally too, but especially in Ireland. I do think that she has a quality to her work that would just appeal to the masses, men and women actually.
It's genderless.
It also looks good, and back to the point of like it carries so much more weight than it being it looking good. It's like something that you're like almost proud to wear. Like how she made something that I would wear and your dad would wear.
Yeah,
exactly. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
she's nailed the formula.
Absolutely.
Also, another menswear designer that I love is Rory Parnell Mooney. He's yes. like very sexy, queer inflected menswear.
So sexy.
It's like I feel like that might be a little too daring for her blue jeans, brown shoes friends. even for myself, I think it would be a bit daring, but it's like, again, it's like searingly hot and just really cool shit. And I just think it's something that you want to wear to a nightclub and you will feel powerful. You will exude powerful.
Oh my God, I love that.
It really gives me like Ibiza in the 70s, like sweat fest, super hot and sexy vibes. Love it.
And it's interesting because I feel like he launched with Fashion East, I think, in like 2015. He did like 3 collections with them, and his work back then was so like monastic and like kind of subdued. And then like his return is just like hot.
It smacks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good. I think women's wear, I would say Roisin Pearce, LVMH prize finalist, Roisin Pearce.
She is I want my wedding outfit, if I ever get married, to be made by Roisin Pearce. She's just simply sublime.
Yeah. I hope she wins the LVMH prize.
If she does, I mean, the fact that she's already won prestigious awards from Chanel, she's already had raving reviews on Vogue for her incredible work. So I think this will just amplify her launch pad a bit more. Like she's already set up as far as like her talent and her skills. She just needs like more eyes on her work now, maybe.
Yeah. And I just think the fact that all of her work is like hand crocheted by her.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So exciting.
Bloody hell.
What really hooked me was everything she creates is this beautiful like virgin white palette. And the gowns and the pieces she creates almost look like these whimsical clouds. But then when you read into the meaning behind, she's actually trying to portray messages about motherhood and loss and the pain and suffering of Ireland in the 70s and 80s through the Catholic Church and mother and baby homes. Like it's these really deep messages, and yet she portrays that in such a beautiful, gorgeous way.
Basically artwork.
It is. I'll be glued to whether or not she wins the LVMH, but even if she doesn't, I think she has an incredibly bright future ahead of her.
I really like Circo Raleigh.
Oh, we love.
Yeah.
Beading, the gowns, the whimsicalness of it. You know, like I think there's very few people who are able to pull off her looks, but the people who do just like own a room, you know, they're not for the wallflowers of the world. Okay, that's fine. But they're just, it's fun fashion at its core, I think.
It's just really exciting as well. And I love to see her, like she's done obviously music videos and everything at this stage, but it's just really nice to see that, you know. Yeah. I think when when an Irish person breaks America, it's just, we're all rooting for you, you know what I mean?
Do you have any thoughts on the Banshee of Savile Row? Like I love Ruby Slevin and Rocco Tullio, and Banshee of Savile Row was the concept of Ruby, who's an incredible tailor, and she's the first female tailor on Savile Row and the first Irish female tailor on Savile Row. They produce the most beautiful tailored pieces made from pretty much all Irish organic linens and tweeds and cottons, and just the fit, everything about it is just perfection.
Yeah, I totally agree. I interviewed them for the first time before Fashion Week, and so nice to see how far they've come. And I know they're even talking about like they might be like expanding to New York at the end of the year. So yeah, Dublin, London, New York is on the cards. I think hearing their story is quite interesting, like what people are buying, like the way that like a lot of, you know, young women are coming in and buying like separates, and then other people are coming in for the full outfit. But I think it's quite a universally appealing line that they are able to like tap into, you know, like young people wear it, older women might wear it.
They appeal to so many different personality types as well. I mean, they cater for businessmen and women, or people who just like to maybe dress up going to a dinner party or a supper club or something like that. This is very Celtic Tiger of me, but I would so fly over to New York to do a little shopping spree.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
This is so Celtic Tiger of me. Oh my God. On the topic of Irish designers and kind of everything that we've just spoken about, is there a piece, it doesn't have to be a bag, but a life or piece from any of these designers that you think you should really get something from them ASAP?
I'm going to New York in May, and I would love to pair it with a lot of money in the Simon Rochester. I don't know what that will look like.
It's going to look like tulle.
I think so. Jewelry is probably like a reasonable one. I want to get like one of the tooth earrings.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have my ears pierced, but I would absolutely do that if I did.
I'm piercing my ear for this.
I love it.
Yeah.
All in the name of fashion.
Yeah, in the name
piercing
of fashion.
Your ears in the name of fashion. Love it. All right. Thank you so, so much. Really appreciate it. That was so much fun.
Yeah. I actually feel like I learned loads.
Of course. Lovely to see you both, and hopefully in person soon.
All right. Bye.
See you
guys. Bye.
That was such a fun interview. I could listen to Paul all day, every day.
The fact that he's been going to fashion shows from such a young age, like basically when he was an embryo, he was going to leading fashion shows. Like,
he's really educated, but he's just the type of person who just like knows exactly what he wants and is going to achieve everything that he wants to. He's so determined and he's brilliant. So if you're not already following Paul, I urge you to go and do that now. But before we go, Ellen Babes, what's on your radar or who's on your radar this week?
To be honest, it's been this week, but it's been like a couple of months to a year now. The Arc'teryx by Jill Sander jacket. It's about 4 million, might as well be 4 million euro because it's way too expensive, but it's so nice. It has such a nice shape. It's black. The zip is on kind of like off center. Like it's just, the cut is nice. The front cut, it's just stunning. It's overall really, really stunning and I'm here for it. And I don't really like overly logoed stuff, even though I have some Jill Sander things and it is overly logoed, but I just really like, I think it's a really nice shape and it's a lifer jacket. Like if I was rich and had 4 million euros and happened to be climbing a mountain that day, I would wear a Jill Sander Arc'teryx jacket. What is on your radar this week?
So I realized today that I am 28 going on 57 because I only want candle holders and tableware and jewelry boxes. it's all I actually want in life.
Oh, a jewelry box is kind of chic.
Jewelry boxes are chic. If anybody wants to gift me anything, please let it be tableware, candle holders or jewelry boxes, preferably from Anna and Nia, the Danish brand who work with a lot of artisan communities that give back, you know, support education and welfare fairly. And they're just the most gorgeous, like little bits for the house that actually don't cost an arm and a leg.
Nice. Yeah. I just bought a few twisty candles, you know, for my big move to Amsterdam. And, my brother works in HomeSense and gets me a discount and they're all hay stuff. We love.
I don't know what it is about a twisty candle, but 2022 is the twisty candle's
the
year.
The twisty candle, yeah.
Well, you're about to fall into a kind of vaccine stupor and I'm gonna go and reevaluate my wardrobe.
Yeah, and I'm probably just going to lay myself to rest. But listen, guys, I can't believe the feedback that we got from the first episode. I'm shocked. I adore you all as your proof and hope you like it. And even if you don't like it, just pretend to like it.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.